Mr. Corden, Real 11. You were telling me about the race meet, three-day race meeting that was organised at Graz, and about how you went down there. You were still a corporal, were you?
Yes, I was still a corporal then. So I went I wasn't asked to do any work, but my brother was asked to do, or forced to do. Didn't need much forcing to do because we were all entertainment. So I went down to Graz. The same time as him, we were both there together. Because I knew we could have a leisure time sometime during the afternoon. But anyway, his job eventually was in the tote, selling tickets. The race meeting was organised as a complete tote operation. No bookies outside. It was all tote operation. And there was flat racing and there was jump racing. And I think there was six races organised each day. Unfortunately, the very first race on that day I went, there was a jump race, and one officer raced up in England, so I think he could help him break his leg. But anyway, he was rushed off to England. But he wasn't one of our officers. But anyway, I had a good day. I enjoyed myself. I think I made a profit. And I kept going back after the race to the slot where my brother was selling tickets. And I'd stand there talking to him while he was selling tickets. Then I'd have a bet on the same ticket as he was on. But anyway, had a good day. Totally enjoyed it. And everybody else did. So the weather was nice. And I think civilians were invited in as well. Were out to come in. So it wasn't just soldiers only. It was all the money, where the money went through, was taking the tour out of our field. And for organisation at job expense. But anyway, soon after that, the horses gradually went away.
Where to?
I don't know. I mean, they were out of our jurisdiction completely. So some organisation must have been arranged and taken away, the horses were taken away from all the companies. Where they went to, probably back to where they came from, I don't know. But anyway, the horses were finished with, and other activities took the place, I expect. But we was at Golden now at this stage.
Now, what was the headquarters? Where were you at Wilden, and what were your billets like?
Well, our particular billet was a snaps distillery, and we just to make snaps there pre-war. Wasn't there yesterday, and my workshop was a garage across the road, and there was room for three lorries in this garage. It was down, great big wooden doors, I'll never forget, and I could get three lorries in. Out of cover, drive in, shut the doors and everything. Now I need to work on one at a time, so, and I had two German prisoners helping them. They were mechanically minded, and very good mechanics they were too. And they was with me all the time I was at Berlin until the prisoners eventually left us, just before we just...
How did you get on with them? I mean, was it friendly?
Right. Got on with them all right. I was trying to learn German. They were learning English, so between us, like two good lads, and we were all right. But we had quite a few Germans helping, and they were under control of the officer, and they had a roll call every morning, and they were designated job, like we were to cookhouse, like we camp cookhouse, this and cookhouse, but these two were designated to transport, same two, every day. And others to cook out, and others to this, and some to chopping trees and things like that. And they had their own billet, and there was no guard required. I mean, they were happy staying where they were, because they knew they would get repatriated eventually. And they were well looked after. That's what bothered them. They were well looked after. And they had their own barrack room.
Now, what was your barrack room like, or billet like?
Our billet was rooms in this distillery. And we were comfortable. Eventually, because transport station, we'd always got beds somehow. Under. If I didn't make them, somebody else made them. But anything to keep you off the floor. And the rooms were comfortable. No central heating, of course. The heating was in the main room. It was a great big porcelain tile fireplace, fed with logs. smokeless. I mean, once you put the lid in, the whole thing got really hot, and that spread its heat right through the room. And there's one of those in two or three rooms. And it goes, oh, we're all right, we've got heating, central heating in a way. The one thing I remember was with no hot water. A bath in, no baths, because I mean, it was distinctive, wasn't it? It snaps just a little bit. So we got this together, me and one of the drivers. We got two 40-gallon drums, cut about a foot off the top, put rubber rolls, cut it with the hammer and chisel, settling burners and empties. Use hammer and chisel, hard work, saw and hammer and chisel, and then put rubber hose on. And that was going to be in the bath. We had two like that. In one of the outhouses of this distillery, there's a big, well, we call them set pots, but it was boiling something, whether for something, wine or whatever it was they were boiling, but there was a fire underneath, so we put water in it. Had the fire, nice good fire, boil the water. There was enough water in there then for two plus cold water in these to get back to. So once we got the water, shouted to the lads, bath time, and we'd have four get back in we changed water. And by that time, we had to make it four, because by that time we had most of the water, hadn't we? Well, the rest of the water was boiling. So I went four of that, ticked that out, because there were drains in the yard, and used it down through the doorway. And four more, that's how we had bath. That was twice a week, bath night twice a week. And I've got a photograph of that yard, looking at the door that used to tip water out of. I've got a photograph of that, taken in 1994, not 45. But anyway, August the 4th came around, and I went on leave to England. I'm in Billup. And
how did you get back?
Same way we went. Went by road from the back, cross country, and came back the same way, back to Calais on those same lorries. Lorries that were made at seats put in, purpose-built lorries by the lads. Seats in, so you could sit down in the back of the lorry. Only so many in the lorry. Enough room for your kits in the middle. And there's one eventual thing that our particular trip found out. There's one part going through the Alps, I don't know which part it was before Brenner Pass or after. The slope was so steep that the lorries that were taking us in the first two or three runs, the engines boiled up, and the engines went a bit air. Because on that particular type of lorry that we were using, there wasn't any fed lubrication system on the engine, it was splash feed. So the front cylinder, it took three lorries to be done this way before they realised what was happening. The front cylinder backed up before the lorry got stuck at hill. So after the third trip, they realised what to do. Well, they couldn't provide lorries with fully forced engines, not for travelling that distance. So it meant Matador. Well, Matador would be take 2 weeks to get that distance. So there was all these lorries on tank loading vehicles. The vehicles used to carry tanks around. And all these at the bottom of the hill, load on, and drive up with troops on everything, everybody on. You sat on these and they took them, because the lorries that were driving these tank carriers were fully fed diesel engines, and they could go up there slow, you see, no trouble at all. It took three trips before they found out what was wrong. Anyway, that covered that over. And then one part of the route we went on the Austrian rail over the Alps, where the engines go up, and we've got these clatters behind us that we put on the back. That's how steep it was. And that was about, I think, 2 hour journey on the train. Then we met some more lorries on the side. They carried on through Germany, France, to Calais, up to England. Of course, it doesn't surprise, because I mean, that's why I can't remember which towns we actually went. I know one place we stopped at was Innsbruck, that's the first stop. Another one was Milan. Another one, I think, was Metz, I think, M-E-T-Z. And then, leaving the food Paris, we had the outskirts of Paris, went to Calais. And of course, in the channel. 4 days we were on the lorries. Now, coming back, I mean, the people had been coming for a month then when we came back.
What was your leave, before you got, what was your leave like?
Oh, well, it was fantastic, wasn't it? Man, it was, I mean, we'd not been home for 3 years, hadn't we? About 3 years, both being abroad at the same time, and it was fantastic. Definitely really wanted to go back, didn't it? Couldn't have brought back. They knew we wouldn't be long before we were coming back again. Anyway, we went back on the 27th of August, both of us. I know that, and I always thought we came home in December. So I'm looking up the books and I've got my Dimon book and those dates in my Dimon book. 4th of August, 27th, return of 27th. And there's in my history, my Dimon book. Otherwise, I would have put down, I would have said that I went on in December. But anyway, that's one of the true stories, that's part of the true story. Right, come back, got back to building, and the next move was to Vienna. We did the normal duties back at Berlin, then eventually we mobilised for Vienna. And I think there was only one company went to Vienna, I think that was B Company. Besides HQ went, and B Company. And we took our two mechanics, German mechanics, we were allowed to take those. Until we got to the border, and then we had to dress them into our clothes in case somebody on border patrol spotted them, because at that time it was still still a bit rough going through the borders. But anyway, we got to Vienna all right, and we were all in a hospital, or had been in a hospital. And the Russians had used this hospital before us, before we got there. Russian being rooted out because noting the time elapsed from end of war, May the 8th, to us going to Vienna in September, was a long time. Now, reading a long time, putting in my back, and probably you know these things better than me, that it took all that time to satisfy the Russians that they wasn't going down Vienna. Austria. The Russians wanted Austria, what they'd occupy. They wanted Austria, and so did the Yugoslavs. They wanted Austria. Well, the four powers had to console the Russians that they weren't going to have Austria. It belonged to Austrians. So they eventually divided Vienna up into four, like they did Berlin. Four powers. And it took all that time from then to the Americans took over. On the 15th of September, they took over on the 15th of September, garrison duties. And that's when they were split into the city was split into four. Well, we arrived in Vienna soon after then, only a day or two after then, because our lads have got to be one to sell the duty guards, and things like that. And like going back onto the major again. He said, not being any seen during war, couldn't do that in wartime. So they had to go through duties again and, you know, really drilled.
And what were you doing?
Well, I was with the transport, just the same. Well, anyway, we were all finished up in this hospital. And in the quadrangle with the hospital, all the vehicles, there was room for all the vehicles in there, which would be about 30 at that time. I was the only mechanic there, and the B company mechanic. And between us, we kept the vehicles okay. Not a lot of work, because they weren't going far. And we were driving on the road, not going around to the road, anything like that night. We were driving on the road, and all they were used for, taking supplies out, eventually, when we went on duties. Otherwise, they weren't the vehicles were all stationed except the commander's car, the officer's cars were, they were coming in and out, of course. But anyway, we was there soon after the Americans took over, and our infantry men were hours and hours in the streets outside the hospital, marching up and down, doing different drills, doing different things. We must have been browned off. We wasn't the MT station, we were inside, and the vehicles put in order first thing. But anyway, we took over then on the 15th of October from the Americans. Well, I missed a little bit. The main thing that when we got to Vienna, the curfew was 8 o'clock. Everybody, 8 o'clock off the streets. And the Red Cats made sure that everybody was off the streets. I know myself, nearly all of us were caught sometime, not getting back into hospital for 8 o'clock. But what a temptation. Going out in a city like Vienna, nightclubs open. Open at 4:30, but closed at 7:30. Anyway, there were nightclubs, there was dancing, there was everything, so we went to it as well. But because we couldn't go out before 4:30, as soon as tea was over, tea was rushed, and everybody were out. Very bare in the barracks in the hospital after 4:30.
How did you get on with the Austrians?
Well, very well, because I mean, there again, the Austrians, a lot of Austrians were speaking English, and they were glad to see us because they didn't want the Russians. They didn't want the Russians. They were glad to see anybody but the Russians. The Russians walked about Vienna with guns on their shoulders and revolvers. None of us had it, we did that. None of our officers didn't even have their revolvers. But the Russians always had their revolvers. No matter whether they were in a nightclub or where they were, they got their rifles on their shoulders and their guns on their shoulders, wherever they were. But anyway, curfew was lifted from 8 o'clock till 10 o'clock. And by the time we went on duty, curfew had been on all that time from the end of war till September, 8 o'clock, anybody off the streets. Everybody. It must have been a difficult job for police. But anyway, I was picked up once, only 200 yards away from hospital gates, but I was whipped into a jeep with two more lads and drove in the guard room, put these men on. Sergeant Major's report. But anyway, we were lucky. Before Sergeant Major made a report out for me and these other two lads, a lot of other lads had been on the charge when they had seen me. We were never brought up in front of Colonel because we were ready for moving. We were moving to the relief, so the sergeant was dropped. But anyway, we did garrison duties then. From the 15th to the 15th of November.
Did you have to, I mean, I know the troops had to be very smart for the parades and everything. Did you have to make the trucks very smart and cleaned up?
The trucks were all, they had to be kept smart, and they were made smart after the travel from London to the joint. And they only went out on supplies. We took supplies from this hospital to our troops that were on duty there. All the castles and all the public buildings, the rat house and the different places, military places. Wherever our guards were, we had to take supplies. We didn't get Russian supplies, we had to take them from ours and take them three times a day. It wasn't fair to get around them all. I mean, not one lorry, two or three lorries that time. And we took the supplies and they cooked their own where they could. They replaced it where they couldn't, we had to go three times a day and deliver it cooked.
So were there any other main duties you did during that period?
Well, when I got back to the camp, invariably there would be probably a vehicle or a motorbike needed attention, and I would have to see to. But invariably, by about 4:30, by tea time, the day was our own. The rest of the day was our own.
So what would you do? What were your recreations?
Well,
if I chanced to go anywhere or got tickets to go anywhere, I went out to whatever place I could get to with tickets, which is, I saw quite a few operas while I was there. One that stood out in my mind was the Fledermaus, and another one was an orchestral concert in one of the halls, I don't know all it was, but Zita and her, oh, he moved that. Zita and her sister and her husband, they barely got the tickets. I provided the money, because they had no money. I provided the money, and we got tickets, and we went to those.
Now, who were these friends? You haven't mentioned them before.
No, I haven't. These are friends that my brother and I met. Well, the first time we went out into Vienna, that's when the curfew was 8 o'clock. We went out, myself, my brother, and one of the drivers. And he'd been out before. It was our first visit out. But he says, oh, I'll show you where to go. And we went to we call it a nightclub. It was just a restaurant with a dance floor. And he said, you can't just barge in. They'll take you to a table. So this waiter took us to a table, asked us if we wanted partners, because we could see they were going to be dancing, or they had been dancing, or going to be dancing. So we said yes. So eventually, about half an hour later, he brought three young women to the table. And two were sisters, that was Zita and her sister, and another friend of theirs. And from then on, well, I went out with Zita and her sister many a time, because my brother didn't stay long in Vienna. After about a week, he went back to Italy with the MO on, for some reason, a course or something like that. But he spent quite a time in Italy. He wasn't in Austria as long as I was. But anyway, whenever I had a chance, I used to make dates with these people, meet them somewhere, possibly for a drink, or just a wine bar, and arrange the next meeting. Because when one wasn't long before 8 o'clock came around, or half past 7, first dash back to the camp. And I met as often as I could. And we went walks. We went in the Vienna woods. Went out on the tram or trams that went nearest, and then walked. Mostly on a Saturday or Sunday, because we hadn't time to go out in the week as much. But Saturday and Sunday were a longer time, because we'd get out at lunchtime. And if there was a theatre, that would be in the week. For the opera, mostly in the week, because we couldn't get tickets for the Saturdays and Sundays. They were snapped up, I expect, with the other people. And just went out whenever I could at night, and then dashed back home. But anyway, I kept friends with these, and John, when he did come back to Vienna for about a fortnight before we left Vienna. And we went to Zita's house again. And then eventually, as I mentioned in the story later on, that I went back to Vienna in 94 on purpose to find these people that had previously been with my wife in 1989. And unfortunately, my wife had broken her foot, so we couldn't get around. She was in a wheelchair in Vienna. But we saw quite a bit of Vienna with the daughter being there.
So did you find them in 1994?
I found them in 1994.
Did they remember you?
Yeah, eventually. Not at first. Not till I showed them the photograph. And she remembered, she got a photograph of me. And straight away, I mean, we went into the flat. That I remember the building. I couldn't recognise the flat inside. I knew the steps, right, any concrete steps right up, wide ones, but I couldn't remember the doors or anything like that. But eventually, after a bit of searching, we found these people. Not the same name, I was looking for a different name. She'd married again, because she'd lost her first husband. She'd married again, and the name was Tonka. Anyway, we're outside one of these flat doors, talking when this a lady who we'd met earlier in the afternoon said, "Haven't you found these people yet?" I said, "No." "So have you tried this door?" I said, "No, I've not tried this door." And the door opened. The lady came out, wants to know what we were doing talking outside her door. And we could see that she wasn't very pleased. But anyway, so we says, "We're looking for this lady. So have you tried next door?" "So I'm just going to press the button next door," and the door opened again, the other door. And he says, "Who's wanting Zita Palmer?" So my dad says, "Father is." "Who's?" He says, "I'm Zita Palmer." And the name, that was the name of Diane Newlands, you see. And she could hear us talking in the passageway. So she says, "We'd better come in." Not talking out here, because I mean, you had to keep pressing the buttons. The lights went only on for so many seconds and went out. So we went inside the flat. And I said, "Well, do you remember me? Do you know me?" He says, "No." He says, "Well, I don't know you." He says, "So we come sit down." So we sat down and got the photographs out. Body of a mean uniform, and one of the theatre, taken 1944, I think it was taken, this photograph, somewhere there. And she looks, says, "Sammy," because she's written on the back of the photograph, "To my Sammy." And then, of course, all fell in place there. She says to her husband, "Go and get the whiskey and make some tea, English tea, and bring the whiskey." Now that goes back to the story when we used to visit in 1945, John and I. Whenever we left there to go back to the digs, to our digs, we always had a cup of tea with whiskey. We provided the tea and the whiskey, because John, he was a sergeant, he got whiskey as a ration through the sergeant's mess. I didn't, I was a corporal. But anyway, so we always took a drop, we always carried a drop of whiskey with us, and we always had a cup of tea with whiskey when we left, and she remembers that. I mean, after all those years, she remembered that. And I'd forgotten that. Nobody else would forget things, but I'd forgotten that, but she remembered. And of course, then there were tears, and everything came to life. So I showed her the photograph of me in uniform. I said, "Oh, yes, I've got one of those." And so I said, "Well, I couldn't remember the room. I couldn't remember outside. As soon as I get in here, I can remember it."
She's not moved. She's in the same place.
She'd been there 54 years. She lived there 54 years. I mean, it was 49 years since I was in there last. But she lived there 54 years. Anyway, we sat and talked, and daughter translated. And we got these bits of stories out one way we could, best way we could. And I says, "Now, if I remember right, I stayed here one night." I said, "But I slept in a single bed there." So she says, "Yes, it's now there. And it was behind the table. And her husband sleeps in that because it's a radiator, it's central heating now. And there's a radiator there, and he can't sleep in the bedroom. There's no heating in the bedroom. He wants to sit where it's warm. So she sleeps in the bedroom, and he sleeps in the..." And that was the bed that I slept on. But still there. Still the same bed.
Yeah.
I remember sleeping on that one night anyway.
So these were your friends. That presumably she was your girlfriend at the time, or just a friend?
Just them, just friends. I mean, we looked after them like they were looking after us, like looking after John and I. We provided them with bits of food that they couldn't get, and they helped us on the evenings out, where we were out, and, you know, taking us down to different places of interest. Took us all around the place of interest all the time. I visited all those that I visited again in 1994.
Now, but you weren't there long, because you were only on there for a month, weren't you?
Yes, we weren't there for long. We was there, must have been there about 6 weeks.
And then back to Wilden.
And then back to Wilden.
Now, at Wilden, but how had things changed? It started snowing by then.
Yes, it was snowing by then, yeah.
Did that affect your job much?
Well,
since you were empty,
it was more work. The main thing was repairing chains, because we had chains on the vehicles in them days.
Snow chains.
How did they work?
You don't see them these days,
no. Well, you laid them down and run onto them like you run the tracks on a tank. And Then you bring them up together and join them with checkers at the top, on the inside and outside, and they can't fall off unless they break.
And that gave them more grip?
That gave them more grip.